Welcome to Movies, Films, and Flicks. I am Mark Hoffmeyer, and joining me are two men who don't think 50,000 points is a good score on Double Dragon. It's Norbert Morvan and James Moula.
He touched my breast!
I hate you.
Very strange.
California.
I mean, listen, that scene where the guy runs up to Fred Savage and just yells, "I hate you." It's so beautiful. It's such a great moment, and it just makes me laugh. Just, "I hate you." Oh, man, when Putnam comes up to him, oh, what a beautiful moment. "I hate you." Just tell the kid he hates him.
In The Golden Child, Eddie Murphy had a similar job where he found children, but he didn't make it seem so pedo-ish as this guy does. You know what I mean? This guy's a bad dude.
He's stopping parents from finding kids.
Yeah.
It's, you know, part of the, there's that scene where Jenny Lewis's character, Haley, is like, "He touched my breast." And then, like, they beat him up, and you're like, you're watching this, and you're like, "Yeah, kill that guy." And, like, I don't think this guy really knew what he was signing up for. By the way, his name is Will Seltzer.
Yeah, Will Seltzer.
And I don't think he's done much since then, but, man, that's brutal when they stop the traffic in Vegas, the two truck drivers, and just...
Yeah, man, the, like, trucker code, you know? Chekhov's trucker code. They mentioned it at the start, early in the movie, that truckers have a code, and Chekhov's trucker code, it came back. "So you touched her breast, huh?" She only gave that dude $10 after he got $400 for them by illegally gambling for the children, and he commits assault and steals a truck for her for $10.
Her dad is like, in quotes, the union leader of the trucker branches in the West. He's the guy who, you know, people owe him favors. So I think that's what she's pulling from right there. Because she can rally the truckers to surround him. And I mean, that, you know, think about it. In 89, that's a decent amount of work, James. Because you can't just do a text chain and call up four truckers.
I'd like to point out, in 1989, the truckers were pretty pissed off about the union busting that had happened and broke up everything to make them independent contractors.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, this is great. The trucker code, this goes back to Convoy, man.
Convoy.
What would happen if...
Rubber Ducky.
Would Jack Burton pick them up if he was driving on the side of the road?
The hitchhiking in this movie struck me as just excessive and incredibly safe, especially for a time that 89 in America, it was all about stranger danger. And these kids are just hitchhiking across the Southwest of the United States without a care in the world, man.
Ebert touched on that in his review. He's like, every single show is about kids being kidnapped and these kids are just traveling. But you know what, though? You're right. You're absolutely right. At the time, they were telling people how dangerous it was. And here's a movie showing one of the most popular child actors on the planet just willy-nilly walking across the country. So, yeah, you know, it's a bad lesson. But it does harken back to, like, the movies of the 80s, 90s where kids were just sort of free-range children. And I'm not going to be that guy that was like, "It was better back then." I'm just saying the movies back in the 90s with, like, what? And the 80s, you know, Goonies and The Wizard and Flight of the Navigator and Sandlot and Stand By Me. It was just kids walking places.
Yeah, except for Stand By Me, those were all fantasies we had in our heads, adventure stories. That's what we grew up on, right? Mm-hmm. And then Stand By Me flew in there and was like, found a dead body. Uh-oh, this is real. But all these other movies, like I was thinking today, watching again through the deleted scenes of The Wizard, there's a scene, right when they start hitchhiking, Corey and Jimmy, right? Then they're up near these caves, and the first thing I see, and now I'm an avid RPG player, so I'm like, there's wolves or a troll or something in there. I can't believe you're comfortable with this. But, like, they had a proper fire. Like, a proper... So who did that? How did they get perfect wood? Light that fire on their own. I don't think they had lighters. All the deleted scenes maybe mentioned that Nick was probably... Maybe he had a lighter and Corey stole it. I don't know. But, like, that's a good fire. Sitting outside a cave, just hanging out in Utah.
Listen, like, Fred Savage solid. Is a beast in this movie. He knows kids in the 80s, they knew how to start fires.
And that's what I mean. No, we're all about adventure.
Oh, yeah, exactly. That's
right. Yeah. That's right. We're raising ourselves. We're latchkey kids, man. We DGAF. Build a fire? Shh. Say less.
I'll throw a magic missile at it.
No, but it's just, you know, watching this movie again, and I think, James, you recommended it to me, The Wizard, correct? That you wanted to cover this. And that's right. All I remembered about it were the huge television screens and watching Jimmy playing Super Mario Brothers 3, which I hadn't seen yet. And I never played it. And I just remember yelling, like, I got so mad at the screen when he got hit by those boomerangs. I'm like, what are you doing, Jimmy? I was like, get out. Why are you run? Like, I don't know. For some reason, I got
bad form.
It was like me watching Twitch. I've never watched, you know, it was early Twitch where you're watching it and you're going, no, don't do that. And then just the crowds around him. I mean, this movie was pretty ahead of its time. I mean, now you get stadiums filled up watching kids playing video games. So I thought it was pretty cool. Yes. I mean, there was the King of Kong at this time, but that was so niche. Like, whoa, imagine the King of Kong crew coming in and playing. Oh, no, this was for kids.
I'm not a Billy Mitchell fan.
Yeah. Get that hot sauce.
The cheater.
But I don't know. I just remember how epic it seemed. And I was a Sega Genesis kid. And I think we're all roughly the same age. I'm 39. Let's see. Norbert is
44.
44, James.
Also 39.
Oh, nice. Yeah, so we like this. Norbert, did you have a Nintendo?
This movie was aimed directly at us. I absolutely had a Nintendo. And the only thing that we knew of Super Mario 3 at the time was in magazines. There was no YouTube. So this was the first time we actually got to see it for real. Millions of children.
And not even Nintendo Power, right? Like, that wasn't the preview. This was the preview, because the first preview Nintendo Power did of a new game was on the Super NES. Before that was even out. That issue is famous.
Right.
You know, so like, we're as kids, and this became a Nintendo commercial. And so you see Super Mario 3 at the end, and like, that's
mind blowing.
Everybody's life. Every kid I talk to, everybody. Yeah. What's going on? Oh, my parents are getting divorced. Do Super Mario 3!
No! Mula, I gotta ask. Rewatching this for the pod, I got chills when Mario 3 was revealed. As a grown ass man, did you still get the chills? I did.
When they're going through the points and then the screen and he's hyping it up and the screens come up, yeah, I felt this. I felt the same. Like, I'm getting it now. I'm getting it now. There was somebody like Super Mario 2 came out and I was like, oh, that's weird. That's like that's. I liked it. I liked it a lot, right? But then, boom, Super Mario 3 comes out and you're just like, Tanuki Mario. Yeah. P-Wing, like, oh man. Yeah.
When he's going through 1-2, I'm screaming at the screen, stand on the white block and press down. Go behind, man. Go behind the
wow. Oh, and Corey at the end, he's like, get a mushroom, get a star. I'm like, mushroom? Get a star. What are you talking about?
Get the leaf, bro. Fly. You're an imbecile.
Get a mushroom. Get out of here, Corey.
So pre-96 and pre-Goldeneye, let's say, what were the games you played the most? On any video game system, would you say? Like, what were the games that you... For me, it was NHL PA 93. I used the Vancouver Canucks.
Oh.
I had Pavel Bure, Trevor Linden, Doug Lidster, and you could punch people. And even before Swingers, I was like, you can make people bleed in this game. And I would just shlack people with the Vancouver Canucks. That was my squad. I used to go to flea markets in Hudson, Florida, and I would go look for Vancouver Canuck trading cards. And you know how hard that is in Hudson, Florida? I found them.
Yeah, I know. Sonic 2, I play a lot of Sonic 2.
Oh, yeah.
Like, lots and lots of nights. Street Fighter 2.
Oh, huge. Yeah.
The first Mortal Kombat. You know, but I've always been a platformer at heart. So, like, Metroid and Castlevania were huge games for me. Ninja Gaiden.
Oh, 100%.
Love that, you know, and then I Sega Genesis was a little less expensive than the Super NES when they came out, so I got the Sega Genesis.
Hey, me too.
Which is great. And there was a game on there called Mercs.
Yes.
Like, yeah, okay, yeah, Norbert, man, it was like a top-down, it was like Commando from the NES, but like
100%.
AAA,
yeah.
Jerry Bruckheimer, yeah.
Yes.
Like, yeah, that game was so much fun, but like that's, I've always been into like, having lives continues going forward. You know, that's always been fun. And then I got into the sports game after the era we're talking about. But yeah, before that, platform action games, 100%.
And me personally, one of the reasons why I got a summer job was so I could just buy myself video games, so I didn't have to ask my mom for money anymore. So I bought it. By 96, I bought the Sega CD that loaded like an old school DVD player with
the
So
you had Sega CD?
So at that time, dude, Sega CD is my jam, okay?
Fantasy Star, man.
Sonic CD. I'm playing all the FMV games. I was into those. I didn't give a damn, son. But that was the time when I was in the dorm at college. So we were playing a lot of Deion Sanders football. We were just getting it on. And, you know, they talk like black dudes. Yeah, you going down. You know what I'm saying? You know what I'm saying? All the weird coded shit that was in the game. It was still awesome. And NFL. was 2000.
What was the video game with the Vikings who played football and you could fall into holes and get hurt?
Jerry Glanville. Pigskin football, bro.
Yeah.
Jerry Glanville. I ran that with my man. And Moolah, you were going to say Mutant League Football, which is
still that was.
And they remade it for Steam. It's out now. It's dope.
Oh, yeah,
the guy who does the play-by-play for NBA Jam does the play-by-play for Mutant League now, and he's cursing up a storm. It's awesome.
Oh, no way. The NBA Jam guy's doing that?
And I'm actually, NBA Jam was Stockton and Malone. That was my team. And then Lion King, I played a lot, but I didn't know how to beat it, so I'm tempted just to buy a Genesis again. So
they
didn't
want you to beat it. They designed it so you couldn't, so you'd have to keep re-renting it.
Because
literally Nintendo made that.
You had to flip Scar.
Or Disney.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I
never even made it that far.
I hit Scar one time for 45 minutes. Just in a poof, poof, poof. But I didn't realize that you're supposed to get to the end, and then when he comes to you, you do that flip maneuver, and you flip him over you and knock him off the cliff.
This is like the logical Elden Ring segue here.
But I was just, I beat everything on that game, and then I just never knew how to do it. So it's always haunted me. It's like lingered over me like a specter in this game. It would have been like if Jimmy lost.
You're not alone, Hoffmeyer. It's been revealed that games that were made at the time that would come out in Japan and the U.S. simultaneously, they were made harder for the U.S. market. So they made Contra for Sega Genesis. And in Japan, you had three hits. America, you only had one. Then you die.
Ooh.
They did it on purpose with a lot of games. They made them harder for Americans.
So did Americans get better at the games?
No. They just quit and buy a new one.
No, I would actually go far beyond that. Because that's what we used to do until people got really pissed off. And they were like, now you have any percent speed runs. Where it's like, I will exploit any glitch or bad programming. And I will beat your system. It's like the, what is it? Kobayashi Maru?
Kobayashi Maru, bro.
That's
the
right.
Winning scenario. How do you think that, my friend?
All right, now, no, one more quick question for y'all. So I was watching this movie, and I'm a big fan of actors looking at screens in movies. So Deep Blue Sea, I love watching Michael Rapaport stare at a screen. And Jason Bourne, I think Alicia Vikander does some excellent screen staring. You know, you got The Wizard, you have every Michael Bay film, people are just watching screens in that movie. Except for Pearl Harbor, where they're listening to the radio. And Kate Beckinsale does some A-plus radio listening in
intently,
that movie.
Intently. Absolutely.
But what I will say, though, is that Luke Edwards, who plays Jimmy Woods, a.k.a. The Wizard, he does some excellent screen staring in this movie. I think he... I think if there was a Mount Rushmore of kids who stare at video screens, or actors or characters who look at video screens, maybe him, anybody from Hackers, maybe Sandra Bullock from the Net. Like who's the Mount Rushmore of characters who look? Oh, Sam Jackson, from Jurassic Park.
Jurassic Park.
Oh,
that's you got your man. You got your man, Wolverine.
Wolverine. I was gonna say Swordfish.
Wolverine and Swordfish. Yeah. What's his name? Jackman. Yeah. Swordfish.
You know, it's not on the same level, though, but I will say this performance was, to me, a Gilbert Grape DiCaprio-type performance.
It's really good.
I think he was a good kid. He's a good kid. He's a good actor.
Both James and I, we tore into the Scream Factory or Shout Factory Blu-ray that came out that comes with interviews, behind the scenes, a new commentary, a making-of documentary. And I thought it was very interesting. The director, Todd Holland, who I thought was Tom Holland. I'm like, the dude who directed Fright Night did this movie? I was like, what?
Nice.
I was like, Child's Play did this flick? But then I realized it was Todd Holland who has shot. He did most of what Malcolm in the Middle. The dude has shot every. He shot Friends. He was a director on Friends. He basically moved on to have a wildly lucrative career. But he said that Luke Edwards did a great job of. He never talked, but he's still interesting on screen. I think there are some mm-hmm. kind of wet noodles sometimes I could cast. And I'm not talking about children. I'm talking about adults because I hate hating on kid actors. Actually, Jenny Lewis right. is really good in this movie. But yeah, I think he does hold the screen, this kid.
Right, little Kylie.
He does. But I think he also has like two like pros with him as well. I mean, Fred Savage at this time was beast mode. The kid was.
Fred Savage got top billing over Bo Bridges and Christian Slater. Okay?
Truth.
That's how big he was.
Christian Gunn Show Slater.
Dude, the title card is Fred Savage and then The Wizard. And then it's like, oh, by the way, Christian Slater and Bo Bridges.
Right. I agree with you 100%, Norbert. You know, but also Mark has a point. And I was watching the show, right? The Wonder Years just, you know, was
everyone
wrapping
was.
Up. And yeah, awesome. That's just a fantastic show there. But then, like, yeah, there are excellent performances. I mean, Bo Bridges. You know, that's one of the things I want to talk about the deleted scenes, is that they took so much of him out of this movie. He was yeah. basically relegated to side care for a lot right. of it, you know, for the younger characters to you know, reflect off of. And it's really sad because his performance really underscores the sadness and trauma of the family.
It's the heart of the movie, absolutely.
Yeah.
I mean,
he's the heart of the movie.
Yeah. I'll go for it.
At the end. Yeah, no problem. At the end of the movie, when we find out what California is, and it was really the friends that we made along the way in that picture, he cries for real, giving that kid a hug. You believe Bo Bridges all the time. And he starts out, you know, as just yelly dad. He's always hating on his kid, stealing the truck and getting drunk and drunk driving. And he seems like a jerk. He's feeding them breakfast, which is red juice and some horrific black stuff in a bowl that I still can't identify. But he was so, so good in this movie. When Bo Bridges plays Turtles all night after first deriding Christian Slater in the hotel yeah. for bringing yes. a Nintendo with him. He no, plays he Turtles did. All night, and he's stuck on the sewer level.
Everybody was right there where he was.
He's stuck on the sewer level because we all were, because there's only one good character in the game, Donatello, and he didn't care. He didn't care. Bo Bridges, his fake Nintendo playing, was just like everybody, you know. He's jerking the controller. When he wants the guy to jump, he's pulling the controller up. He was so good in this movie.
Well, so to add, man, I'm just going to – I have to preach with Norbert here because Bo Bridges is really just – so the first, like, seven deleted scenes have Bo Bridges in them. And, like, the very first one is Corey coming down the stairs saying that Nick and him are going to take the boat out and learn how to ski. Dad, do you want to come with us? And he's just like, no. And then in the muted background, you see the beer cans there.
Yeah.
And you're like, oh, man, this is a really sad man. Like, what's mm-hmm. happened to him? But, like, that's a great establishing moment for his yeah. character and what trauma everybody's going. This whole movie is about trauma.
Yeah.
Like, everybody is suffering on different levels,
mm-hmm.
you know, and it starts with him. And the very next scene is the friends pranking Corey. He's playing Mega Man 2. He's on the Airman stage, and the friends put the puppet up in the window, and they're like, "You got to come to the arcade." And he's like, "I got to get by Dad." And so, like, he comes downstairs. Dad's like, "Don't slam the screen door." And I think it was Lloyd, Nick's friend, that says, like, "Since when did your dad?"
Jesus Christ.
And you're like, "That's the first two deleted scenes." And you're like, "Oh my God!" Like, there's. Like, you know, so Fred Savage comes out, like, without the deleted scenes. He's like, Wonder Years Fred Savage, hot stuff, Nintendo guy. I'm going to bust my dude out. We're going to go to California. But, like, this kid's broken, too. Like, yeah. very broken. Like, yeah. his whole family's busted up. But they don't establish that. So he just comes out like a pop star when really he's like.
But you have this movie go 2 hours, 30 minutes, bro. This is the thing. Something's got to give, you know what
well,
I'm saying?
You know,
I checked out after dude wins the contest. I'll be honest with you.
I was telling Laurel earlier, right? This movie, so they always say, right? You can never go home, and this movie really defines that for me because I always remember this movie as like favorite awesome Nintendo movie, just fun, happy, stuff happens, triumph, blah, blah, blah. And then here I am, almost 40. I'm going back and I'm watching my favorite Nintendo movie as a kid. And I'm like, oh my God, this is,
it's depressing.
This is, it's dark. This is, it's really depressing. It's about trauma. Mm. And like, but there's Nintendo in it. So like, I guess that's really the definition of, hey, we grew up in the 80s.
Alternate title, dude. Nintendo presents PTSD.
Before they had the acronym.
Like, they didn't even want him going to California. The studio execs were kind of like, yeah, we don't want this going to California. Like, we're not even going to end it here. And they didn't want the dinosaurs. Like, you know the kid originally, Norbert, do you know how this ended originally?
The kid wins the game and then jumps off a building or something.
What happens? His little lunch pail and he throws it into a river, but his sister drowned.
Right.
So
yeah, doesn't make sense.
So he's
Jennifer.
Yeah. So that's,
thank you.
I am throwing, like, I guess he's saying like your stuff can sync with you. I don't, it's really,
he kept her. The thing is, he kept her little shoes and knickknacks from her in that lunch pail. You come to find out when the bullies, the quite frankly 20-year-olds who just assault children. A lot of that is happening in this movie, but anyway.
Third deleted scene though. Should have mirrored that scene. So yeah. when Corey comes out of the house and is extorting his brother for more money so as not to slam the screen door. He gets the money from Lloyd and Nick and then slams the screen door and they run away, knowing there's going to be a comeback. And the next scene is them sitting on the bleachers eating pizza. And then you see Nick come tearing through the field in his car. And he's like, oh, my God, that's Nick. And they all start running away. And then they're beating on the kids in the field. And they're like, you know, don't touch Jimmy. Don't touch Jimmy. Well, that's exactly the same scene that happens again later in that movie.
Yes. Chekhov's assault. You had to bring it back.
I guess it's better when it's your brother, right? Your brother can show up in Walmart.
I had some serious fights with the family, you know.
No, but like,
I was the older brother, so it's probably coming back on me someday.
It's just interesting to watch though, because this kid saw his sister die, and then the relationship, the parents break up because the daughter died. Then you get the new stepdad. Then they want to institutionalize a kid. I mean, and then he's building, but he's it is the 80s though. I mean, you know, when I got hurt, I remember I got cut really wide open one time, and they're like, he'll be fine. Just take him home. So I don't think it was a time
where... Rub some dirt on it.
Yeah, and I still have a giant scar on my leg. So I guess at the time, you weren't thinking about this kid having issues because of his sister. You're just thinking, what's wrong with this little punk? But that was the narrative.
Oh, yeah,
so,
it's the 80s.
Yeah.
It's the 80s, bro. It's the 80s. The entire family is trying to ignore their small child.
Institutionalized.
Sam McMurray wants to throw him in an institution and drug him up so that he's out of the way. Yeah. There is nothing more Reagan era than, there's nothing wrong with you. Just play some baseball.
We could be in the Wilson era. We could be in the Taft era. We could be any time before that. It's astonishing, though, to talk about this as adults now, all of us, who grew up during this time and go, that's barbaric.
We saw this. You know, doctors recommended to my mom that they should just zoot me up because I'm batshit, clearly. You know?
The minute I went to elementary school, they were like, we think there's a problem. Throw them in the slow person classes. And so what did I do in New York, which is where I'm back in, right? But but that's what they did. Slingaling was the name of those classes, first through third grade. And then I got to Florida and they're like, oh, he's not stupid. He's just pretty smart and bored.
Yeah.
But then Florida, so I don't know.
I was just about to say, caveat Florida. I mean, no, we love you, man. No, you're a genius. Fuck this.
I feel like I'm the liaison here. I got New York on one side, I got Florida, and then I'm New York, Florida. Right here in the middle. Oh, that's a bad mix. I should just pack it in, guys.
Florida, New Florida. Hey, there's a New Florida. No, that's New Tampa. No. New Tampa's blowing up, by the way. Old Tampa? No, Old Tampa's doing great, too.
All I know is Daytona Beach is where I saw one of those dudes from Saved by the Bell. And then I participated in a strip contest, and I don't remember what happened next.
What, you won, and you went on a national tour with the guys from Magic Mike. Isn't that what happened?
Oh, right. That's it. Yeah.
I was messaging Norbert earlier, James, and what I do like about this movie I really feel like they shot a lot of it on location. I'm not talking Universal Studios and the ending, but I do like a lot of what Utah and California and what Nevada, like, I like the locations that they found. They felt very, kind of every town they went to felt real, except for they traveled to a small town and a kid named Lucas is there with a, with like a bespoke box with 97 Nintendo games and a power glove that was really rare at the time. But they, I like how they keep finding people to swindle in the country roads. But it's still, like, I love the locations of it. I think they, the second unit did a good job capturing B-roll. Like, watching this again, James, like, did you get a good sense of kind of the open road?
Actually, my, my favorite shot is specifically of that. So when Nick and Sam are, when they first go out, there's the whole scene right before that where, like, the magnet comes off the side of the truck. And then you later see them again going around the side of a mountain pass. And Nick throws the keys out the car because they get in a fight while Sam's drinking a slice. And they get out the car. And then after the resolution of the scene where they're fighting about Christine, which is also a very confusing scene, which I'd like to touch on, right? Because Christine, I thought, was the previous wife. But in this scene, they make it seem like she wasn't. And so I'm kind of confused about that. But when you turn the camera around to see them getting back into the car, it's just beautiful scenery of Utah. The mountains and snow cap. And like when I drove in here to Western New York from Maryland coming through Western Pennsylvania, we went up through a lot of really high mountains and passes like this. And I'd never seen anything like that. And I thought, wow, this is amazing. And so I thought to myself, rewatching this movie, how do you shut down this part of the road? Like, it's shut down.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And so like, for them to do that, to get this beautiful shot, they didn't have to. They didn't have to. They could have just done an Indiana Jones him with, like, map spot. Bink, 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 another map spot.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
They took the journey and took the shot, took this moment. And the shot is really what accentuates it. To your point, it's the most beautiful shot for me in the whole movie.
I think my favorite shot's the skateboarding scene where they're going down the hill and Jimmy is sitting on the skateboard. And Corey is standing on the skateboard, and they're going down the road, the mountainous road, and the truck just drives around him. Now, I know that wasn't them on the skateboard when the truck drove around him, but I like that. I dug that vibe. I really like the industriousness of these two kids, and I like that they actually had someone going down that hill while a truck goes around him. It felt, I don't know, that's probably my favorite part about this movie is the location scouts on this film definitely earned their money. They shot, and you know, the director was talking about on the extras that when they did the location scout, or was it the producer, but they said normally when you're on these kind of roads, you can zone out because you're just seeing nothing but open spaces, but they had to look everywhere to find cool spots to shoot. And I think they did. And I think that adds a lot to this movie. I think it adds a level of authenticity to it, I would say, for sure.
Man, I was 11. I wanted to see video games. I didn't care about Utah. I was Brooklyn.
I mean, that's true. Yeah.
I want to see Metal Gear. I want to see Ninja Gaiden. Damn it.
See Mortal Kombat, you want to see the tournament.
That's why I was there. Exactly. I was there for the product placement. I was not there for the lovely landscapes of Utah.
Oh, man. Listen, I don't remember those either. But
you know, you go back to it, but yeah, Norbert's absolutely right.
Yeah, I mean, nowadays, that's what I like, right? But yeah, when we're watching it, I just want to go, where's my Superman 3? Where's my Double Dragon?
But see, I grew up skateboarding, too. So shout out to Vision Skateboards, Mark Gonzalez, the Gons, godfather of street skateboarding, which is probably nice. Why they chose that Vision Skateboard to do that scene you're talking about.
Yeah,
that was kind of cool. Yeah, you're a kid. You want to get out there. But yeah, Norbert's absolutely right. You know, even though they were playing NES games on arcade cabinets, which is just absolutely ridiculous, but
no, dude.
Street Fighter, right?
Late 80s, early 90s, PlayChoice 10 was absolutely a thing, dude. I went to an amusement park, one of those water park type things, maybe it was Great Adventure. You could absolutely put in a buck, press the button, and select an actual emulated Nintendo game. It was real. Those were real, the PlayChoice 10 machine.
But these scenes aren't portraying that cool stuff. This is supposed to be Contra and Double Dragon on the cabinet. And like, they're like, just
by itself.
And I'm like, yeah, put it in the corner. There's like the two-player screen. I'm like, you don't put it in this. You just put it in the corner. Just put it in the corner and start. And then somebody gets mad because the enemies get tougher now that there's two of us.
I do love the whole Rain Man, except with Nintendo games aspect of this movie, that this kid can go around Southwestern America at a time when playing video games still made you a nerd and a jerk, and just find hundreds of people to scam in actual arcades and diners. Like,
at any age, doesn't matter their age.
Did it piss you off, James, when they're playing Double Dragon and the hustle is, I can get a higher score than you in Double Dragon? When have you ever played Double Dragon for score? You know, I'm trying to beat the game. I don't care what score I have.
At the end of the movie, when they're like, with a score of 82,000. I'm like, with a score? Like, who made it farther? I don't get it.
That's the entire point of Mario is not to get 1,000,000 points. The point is, save the friggin' princess, jerk. Let's go. Yeah.
It's like, oh, this guy is hitting a lot of coins right now. He's really racking up the points. Meanwhile, the other guy just beat the board and he's on the second board already. And I'm like, dude, you're losing. What are you hitting the coins for?
Oh, man. And the girl with pigtails, she just loved playing the game. She didn't care about winning or losing. She just got mad when she would die. But she didn't.
She was so angry, though, when she only got 40-something thousand. I was like, man, I know that kind of determination, though. Oh, man, I fell for her there. She really tried. I mean, she did.
Yeah, gorgeous Laura Grissom.
Have any of you ever had 97 Nintendo games? Because I haven't.
No.
Luke's had nine.
No, I had maybe 12. Like, yeah, 12, that's about right. In my whole case growing up.
That's about right.
We traded stuff. That's it. That's how I played all the games. I traded them.
You know, that's how I played Resident Evil for the first time. I let someone borrow my Mario Kart on GameCube. I wish there was a GameCast, by the way. Malibu's Most Wanted call out. Shout out. But yeah, so I let them borrow that, or Smash Brothers, and they let me borrow Resident Evil. I played Resident Evil for 6 minutes, and I turned it off because it scared the living crap out of me. But yeah, that was fun.
It was hardcore. I saw directionals.
For the time, it was hardcore.
Yeah, you play games because, you know, it was fun. It was fun switching out. And also, too, if people don't know, because we haven't told them yet, I first met James and Norbert in 2007? 2008? 2008. In South Korea. We worked at the Chungdong Institute. And when I first met James Gil Mula, he had a V-neck t-shirt on, and he had his hands right up in his armpits emulating what Christian Slater was doing at the body shop during this scene. And he was just looking all, like, threatening me. And I remember looking at him. I went, Norbert's Slater.
Norbert's got a picture of me in a Yankees cap before we hiked Sonnendom.
And I went, and I looked at him, and I go, Slater from Wizard? He goes, yes, that's right. But, yeah, I didn't know if you noticed Slater pumping the gun show during his scene at the repair shop, or not the repair shop, I guess they're stripping that car. You know, this guy,
they did a quick job,
is trying to rescue his son get his son from running away, and they're actively trying to stop each other from finding their children.
Yeah, seriously, it's incredibly disturbing how many people do not want Beau Bridges to find his son because they would rather lock him away and drug him into a blind stupor, or they want to just capture him and make money at all costs, assaulting random kids in public in broad daylight, the dude with glasses. So he's it's crazy.
I have this question for both of you then, because, like, the deleted scene with my favorite mountain shot, right, kind of goes into that whole dynamic. And now, so I assumed that Christine was the mom. But when Nick gets out of the truck, he tells his dad, since Christine came into our life, she doesn't like me, she doesn't like Corey, but she's with Bateman. She's Christine Bateman.
Yes.
So since she came into our life, I thought you came into her life. I did not. So is it?
Yeah. Well, like, the answer to your question is Metal Gear. That's the answer to the question. The answer to your question is, did you see Ninja Gaiden, bro? Did you see how far he got when you have to defuse the bombs in Ninja Turtles? That's what proved to me that he was the wizard, you know? That's the answer right there. Answer is, well, not high five.
That lady's not the Christine? That lady's who's not the Christine? Mom? Doesn't she say, take our boys home?
Yeah, so specifically for this scene, I was like, WTF, who is Christine since she came into our lives? And I'm like, well, that doesn't make any sense to me. Like, maybe that's why this game was deleted. I don't know why include it in the Zack Snyder version of this movie.
Oh yeah, totally. And the answer is, did you see Rad Racer with the Power Glove, bro? That's the answer. You know? Did you see the Nintendo gameplay counselors that you can call? It's not an 800 number either. It's a 900.
He's not even reading the right game book.
Not at all.
How long did they talk for 3 straight days?
Like 3 days, bro. 3 days. And that was the montage of product placement. Nintendo gameplay counselors, Zelda hat, TMNT, defuse the bombs level, Mega Man 2, Metroid.
Dude, like RC 10, Pro 12 hours a day. There's a there's that series on about... Well, I'm not going to plug other content.
Do it. I don't care.
it's on Netflix, where MFF should be. And
all day. Let's go.
Well, they got the guy who eats nothing but fried food, and they made a show about that. This is way more interesting. But it's a show about games, and there's a whole episode that goes through like the whole Nintendo, like, you know, Nintendo Power Magazine, the guys who gave you tips, and like, yeah, it was as grueling as you think it is. Like, when you look at what happened at like CD Projekt Red and the oppressive Activision. That we'd never say its name again.
Never again.
Yeah, but that's where this kind of stuff started, though. It's like, you want to be in video games? Prove it.
Do you guys want to hear a sad story?
Oh, yeah, that's why I'm here.
All right, so when I was younger, you know, we didn't have my parents split. We didn't have, like, that much money to, like, just get people birthday presents. So I got invited to a birthday for a friend of mine. And they were opening up gifts for this friend. And someone got him that game for Sega Genesis, the, like, indie car racing game that was just the hotness at the time. Just got him, like, a $60 gift. And I remember just going, oh, no. Because all I got him was a video gaming magazine. But those things were awesome. So I was like, man, I'm getting my buddy like a video game magazine. But when you get a video game right before you get a video game magazine, oh, man, I got made fun of. That was an ugly party right there. That was a bad. But you guys talking about those video games reminded me of that. But, yeah, I remember that.
Oh, man.
Who gets their – and when you're in elementary school, who gets their friend a video game?
No.
Oh, the rich kid, dude.
Yeah,
the rich kid. He's showing off.
If you knew Rich Kid.
He's showing off. Dude, Nintendo games were 50, 60 bucks a pop brand new, bro.
$49.99, Norbert at KB. Yeah. At KB.
Man. KB Toy Store, yeah. These were not $20 games.
Norbert, Funko Land was our land.
Funko Land was the Join Us. Yeah, and then it became GameStop, and everything changed.
Yeah,
everything
dude,
changed.
That was from when I was a kid on Long Island, man. Funko Land.
Yeah, absolutely. I would go to Green Acres and test the games and just hang out with the dudes. You could go to Funko Land for like 3 hours and just kick it with people and talk about games and just get secret codes and whatnot. It was dope.
Yeah, nice. Yes.
Oh, man. But I'm telling y'all, I remember buying those video game magazines, and I just thought they were the coolest thing. Learning about the new things, learning about like what was hot. I remember I wanted an RPG that I learned from one of the magazines. My mom bought it for me, but I felt like it was way too expensive, so I felt really bad about having it. And I like never, and I like never played it because I was like, man, I feel terrible every time I played it. I felt like a sense of dread while playing it. But no,
the magazines were $5, man. Yeah, I know. Look, the magazines were not cheap, okay? And Mortal Kombat came out for Sega Genesis, and Genesis had the blood code. And I wanted to know the blood code, and there's no internet in my house. So I walk into EB Games, I grab the magazine, I flip to the page with the code, D-U-L-L-A-R-D, bong. I walk out, man. I go home, blood is there. Get over here!
And what was the other one, though? A-B-A-C-A-B-B?
Abacab, yep.
Yeah. What was that one?
The Abacab code, I think that was just a general, you could just do the dip switches and frig around with the game.
Yeah, I don't remember what it was. Stuff. I heard it on 93.3, Mark.
Yeah. You know, I just went down to Florida and I listened to 97.1 the entire time, the alternative channel. Also, I just want you guys to know that you would have hated playing video games with me because when I played Mortal Kombat, I was backpack forward with Raiden every single time. Backpack forward. And then I took E-Honda. And I did the backpack forward with him too. Isn't that what the code was for E-Honda?
I think it was hold just back forward and then forward.
That's all I did. That's all I did. I was that guy. And then people would yell at me. I'm like, well, learn how to block it. And then they learned how to block it. Oh, man. And then they learned how to block it, and they just destroyed me.
I had a buddy. All through life. I still know him now. Still hang out with him. And we all got Smash Brothers, you know, for the 64.
Dr. Mario.
And he was always Pikachu. Everybody else would just like variety character and get better with characters and then have epic matchups. He's just Pikachu every time, do the same spam stuff. And we're like, God damn it. And then, you know, MVC 2 comes out. That's Marvel Capcom 2. And we would just start just making up stupid rules, like only people with red on their face or hat. He would pick Blackheart every time. Like, dude, you're not even having fun with this. But then eventually, years later, he just would basically flip the table and be like, oh, I'll play with you guys. And I'm like, you've been playing the same guy for 3 years.
You see?
You haven't gotten, you know?
And ladies, but, and I'll tell you, ladies and gentlemen, this is why the wizard was made. Because look what the wizard has done to us. Oh, we became addicted to these games because of this movie in a way that no other advertisement has ever worked. The third act of this movie is a Nintendo commercial in a way that no third act has ever been a commercial for something in the history of mankind. Not even putting like the BMWs into the Marvel movies has worked the way the wizard has worked on us.
Oh man, it's still with me. It's still there. Yeah. I have a question, James and Norbert. So the kid in this movie, he was Jimmy Woods, the wizard. So you're younger, and you're the age of Jimmy, and you are a video game savant. You're amazing at video games. But when they call you forward, so James, when they call your name, what's your nickname? So Jimmy is the wizard. What would you have been called with your skill set?
Harold Badger.
the Harold Badger?
That's been my name on PlayStation since I've had PlayStation.
Oh, no. Like, you're like the wizard. Oh, okay. I'm talking about like the skill set. This kid was like a wizard.
The Badger.
The Badger.
I chose Harold Badger for that reason, because of
constant attack.
Wind in the Willows. He's a quiet, angsty, older dude with excellent gray and black features on his beards and stuff. And he's stubborn, he's impatient, and he likes to win, and he's passionate, but he's kind-hearted too. Just you've got to get through the prickly stuff. Yeah, I'm the Badger.
Oh man, that's amazing. What about you, Norbert?
That works. I am Milky Cereal, because you don't understand why these things are here, but it's working. It's happening, baby. It's gonna happen. It's Milky Cereal all over your face. You don't understand why.
Cereal and the Badger.
That's it, man. That's it. Oh, we combine to form Milky Badgers.
Man, what would I be? All right, so
let's go.
Okay, I guess I would. I remember I was playing tennis once, and my brother stopped. And he's like, "Mark, you play tennis like a linebacker," and just So I made it to States a couple years in a row, but nothing I did was pretty, and I just sort of confused everybody. But I was more of like a blunt force object than anything pretty. So like when I played Halo, I just would grab a shotgun and shoot people and stay alive long enough till the snipers would take them out. And then I'd probably die, but four people would go down and I would get knocked out. So I've never done anything pretty. I'd just be like, Mark.
You got to go with the 80s vibe, man. So
Howie maybe Long?
Maybe you're the Cube Gleamer. You know what I mean? Maybe you're 720.
Oh, I like the 720 on that.
Radical Spike.
You gotta
go 80s with it, man.
I like Radical Spike a lot.
Yeah, let's do Radical Spike. Because people are like, what does that mean? He's a Radical Spike.
Mark, you go the rhyming route, you're Mark the Shark. You're Mark the Shark, you know what I mean? Because you just eat MCs.
Likes to clip fools in the dark.
I am not smooth enough to be a shark. I feel like being a pool shark, you have to be smooth. That's not me.
Land shark.
What about the shark from Deep Blue Sea? He didn't have to be smooth. He was brute force.
Those things planned the entire escape. They herded the humans. Like, they played them.
Yeah, they did.
Every step of the way, they knew what was going on. That's not me.
No. No, I just wanted to hear a Deep Blue Sea thing. I've been waiting. Oh,
I love it. No, thank you, man. Yeah, I'm the. I gotta. You know what's funny? I've become the guy who gets Deep Blue Sea messages. So a friend of mine, Joey Lewandowski, he's doing a 1999 the podcast, and they brought in Brian Raftery, who wrote the book Best Year Ever, how 1999 is the best year ever of film. And so during it, Brian kept talking about Deep Blue Sea, and then Joey's like, I got a guy you should meet. And then Brian goes, I got a guy you should meet. So they've both been on Deep Blue Sea, the podcast, and I've been on their Fast and the Furious show, and Brian wrote about me for Wired, but when they talked about Deep Blue Sea, they're like, we got a guy for you. Like, they said it at the same time. So I've become so synonymous with Deep Blue Sea that authors and, like, podcast hosts bring me up.
To bring your little world of MFF, I had, I've been reading Cracked for, like, 15 years.
Nice.
And, like, since I started participating in MFF over the last few years, I had no idea who Zanandi was. And, like, I read her articles all the damn time, man.
She's awesome.
Yeah.
Yo, dude. Yeah. But it makes me, unfortunately, biased sometimes because I love all her articles. So when she posts movies, I'm like, I can see. And then I'm like, no, not you can see. Separate. The movies, just the movies. But, like, that's really cool, man, because I've been a fan of hers for years, man.
Oh, really?
Yeah, gentlemen. That's awesome.
You know, she's the reason I started writing that Cracked. Yeah, nice. She wrote about my It Follows data piece. And then I contacted him. I was like, hey, thanks for doing this. I was like, do you guys need any writers? And that Jason Pargan was like, yeah, sure. So then I started writing pieces for Cracked. And then I thank Zanandi for bringing me on. And then I brought her onto the podcast. And now she's like part of like the MFF crew. So it all. And then you've been reading her for years. Cool. So it's cool.
Yeah, that's really cool, man. Mint. That's another word I haven't heard in forever.
90s, bro. New York.
Dude.
My question for you all. Okay. We have this weird preteen semi-Wonder Years romance between Fred Savage and the lady, right? And so they're playing this kind of terrible will they, won't they, Maddie and David Addison moonlighting thing as they road trip to California and get into video.
She knocks him unconscious.
So she assaults him several times. And then Lucas comes out of nowhere. He's got the power glove, which he loves because it's so bad. And he pulls out the power glove and he demonstrates the ease with which he can control the car in Rad Racer. And then out of nowhere, Fred Savage just flexes. Just keep your power glove off of her.
Yeah.
Is he ready to go for it at that point? Because he does this awkward kiss thing later, and she just duffs him out and then makes out with him anyway. But it's really bad.
Nah, dude. So I think – so here's the bad boy, right? Her dad's a trucker union leader. Like, she's around rough and tumble dudes, so she's probably got a little bad boy, like, respect in her, right?
Right,
and then
right.
Here comes Frank Damage. come on, we're gonna go to California. Let's. Who's playing the game here?
He's got the dance monologue, yeah.
But then, like, he's willing to take a beating. He's willing to stand up for her. He's willing to take a chance on getting a kiss. Willing to get smacked down and willing to stick it in all the way to the end of the movie. So then, after the tournament, he's like, "Let's go, Haley," and she's like, "Yeah." And I'm like, dude, that's a guy that's you played it. You long, man.
That's right.
This is your dedication to this girl.
I wrote in my notes, second base. I was like, yeah, he's going for it.
Oh, gosh.
And he'll get punched again.
He will.
I love when he puts the mask on, though, and she just knocks him unconscious. Like, she blanks him out. But I got to say, Jenny Lewis is really good in this movie, though. I know that the studio wanted to cast another actress, but he just didn't like the actress, so then they brought her in. But, like, you actually – like, her line readings, like, she's like, I know people too. Like, you – sometimes – I don't know. The best thing about these kids, they didn't really feel like they were acting in this movie. Sometimes when you watch a child performer, you know, if they're not directed well, if they haven't been in the game that long, you do feel the acting. But with them, these kids felt pretty natural and, like – when I was watching the scenes with Jenny and Fred, I was like, man, she's like, yeah, I don't know. I thought it was cool. I thought it was a cool dynamic.
That's actually, so I kind of wanted to ask too. So I'm a big Rilo Kiley fan. I think The Execution of All Things is one of my favorite albums. Although my favorite song by them is not on the album, but as an album as a whole, I think that I just absolutely love it. And there's a lot of mature in the lyrics. I mean, obviously she's older. I really came up as an emo kid. So.
No.
No, shocking. 2007 Chicago, living in the basement of the Congress Theater. Are you? Get out of here. Chicken egg. What begot what? You know, she's extremely mature in her delivery, in her acting in this movie, and then her music is, I think, exceptional. But like, why was she always this creative, and this was just the first outlet, and then the second outlet happened, or did she do this and then flourish after it? Because I mean, probably a lot of all of those things.
Oh, for sure, man, for sure. I mean, early on, you could tell she's kind of feeling Fred Savage, because she just comes out of nowhere. I got my mom's legs. Take a look. But Fred Savage is looking at Jimmy and he wants to pet the cow instead. It's really weird, man. She's just like, look at my legs, Fred Savage. Take a hit. and it doesn't kick in until Alpha Male shows up with the power glove. And then suddenly he realizes, the female is being tempted. And
that's
now,
a good point.
Clever line. Just keep your power glove off her, Lucas.
That's just, you just want to see Fred Savage just hold up his hand and be like, beep, 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 beep.
Exactly. And he's got the weird Daniel Stern monologue going on the back of his head. Haley was so strange, and yet there was something really attractive about her. I wonder if Jimmy's going to want a sandwich later. Can I play Nintendo as good as he can? What would you do if I say?
Oh my gosh. Hey, can you recreate, do you want to narrate the mashed potato moment from Wonder Years, which is probably one of my favorite all-time TV moments? Do you remember that scene?
I've seen every episode of that show, but it was in middle school. And the only things I remember from middle school are How to Be Altered Beast and Turtles in the Arcade. That's
so,
it.
Altered Beast, man. I played that for the first time in a whiz, dude.
The scene is when his parents are fighting in Wonder Years. And he's like, they're fighting. They're ripping each other apart. I had to do something. But it was Daniel Stern's voice, I think. So he takes this huge glob.
That's Daniel Stern. That's right.
He takes this gigantic glob of mashed potatoes on this large serving spoon and just takes it and then pulls it back like he's going to flick it and just flams it in his big brother's face. I mean, we're talking just because he's like, I had to do something. And so everyone stops arguing. They're like, why'd you do that? What are you doing? They stop arguing just to look at the mashed potatoes. And his brother looks at him and goes, while you sleep. And it's just,
I figured that Wayne meant somebody, yeah, he would do something to me while I was asleep. Maybe he would put my hand in a bowl of cold water so that I would go to the bathroom on myself. Maybe he would tell Winnie Cooper that Paul was actually the better choice for her. Ooh. I don't know. All I know is I had a biology test at 10, and I hadn't studied at all. What would you do if I sang?
Oh, Winnie Cooper, man. Jeez Louise. But, no, I mean...
So home.
But this movie now, I mean, listen, I was happy to watch it again because this movie's really been on my mind, so I was happy to kind of go back and check it out. But yeah, it was definitely edited in oblivion. But, I mean, Universal wanted a 90-minute movie. And James has been talking to me about, you know, there is feelings of loss, of, you know, families being broken apart, of death and grief. And, you know, what I like, too, is at the end of this, Jimmy is not totally solved. Like, this kid is still going to have to work through some issues. Like, I like that there's no magical, hey, I'm cool now, guys. That really makes me happy, I guess you can't have that in this movie because it would just be a tonal. That's not the movie, right? This is a Nintendo commercial. Like get from
that's
A
right.
to B to C.
That's
and,
it.
And then get that's to it. N for Nintendo.
Mm-hmm. And you feel that things are going to be okay eventually, but eventually is going to be when he's 30. This is not something that's going to get solved in next week's episode of Nintendo Power, the movie. You know, that kid's been through a lot. Look, in terms of ways to die, drowning is the worst to me. There's no way. And this kid watched it, man. So, yeah, he doesn't want to talk. He doesn't want to play Pogs with you all. You know, he doesn't care that The Simpsons is going to debut later on that year.
He just wants to know how to deal with grief.
That's it, man.
And everyone, feel like he should have helped her. But he didn't.
Right. And everyone in his family is thinking, how about some Zoloft instead, bro? And a cold white room. You know what I mean? That's brutal, man.
Well, so there's that scene with Nick, though, where he's yelling at his dad that Corey's been trying to tell you. But, like, he's been shut off. He's just been drinking and depressed. But, like, of course, like, you're a parent. Your child died. Like, every fiber of your being is like, I should have protected her.
Mm-hmm.
You know? And so, yeah, he tuned himself off. The kid's trying to say, like, he just needs, you know? And this is the other thing, too. It's like, you know, Jimmy's on the spectrum, you know? And we didn't talk about that in the 80s either.
Mm-mm.
That was a thing.
You know what the thing is, though, man? I don't feel like he actually was on the spectrum. I think that this particular incident hit him so hard he just shut down.
It's curious, it's, though, right? Like he could be. Is
they
he
treat him or is they treat not? Him like they treat him like he was normal before she died. The way that Fred Savage keeps snapping at him every time he tries to make Tetris blocks with stuff, you know, it was like, you used to be cool, what happened? Like, come back.
I mean, you know, probably, I mean, did he report it? Did people see what happened and came and they were screaming and stuff, you know? And so it's, you know, that would be an interesting, I have to go back and really, not that I'm an expert, but like, that's a really good point, Norbert, you know, but then here they are going to institutionalize him. So no matter what you or I believe about
right.
Jimmy's condition, they're just going to throw him in the room, lock the key.
Yeah, you know, he doesn't want to play football. He's not chasing girls. This is the 80s. Drug him. Get him out of here.
It was really interesting. There was a psychologist on the DVD who was talking about Jimmy, and she was trying to diagnose him. And she said that, you know, some of his actions do represent being on the spectrum, but some don't. So when he comes into the city, he has no problem adjusting to it. Like, he's happy to be surrounded by people. He doesn't have mm-hmm. that issue. And so at the end of it, she seemed genuinely, what's the word? She wasn't sure. She couldn't diagnose the kid. So I guess it's good that they left it so wide open. But yeah, she said, yeah, she's like, I suppose, but then he does this, but then he does that. But I do think that trauma when you're a young kid and then your parents become so broken that they don't talk to you, throw in the 80s, you know, and Fred Savage is being rough on them too, but these kids are also not getting any attention from their parents, and it's the 80s once again.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, I mean, you become very compartmentalized. You go into your own world. You build blocks when you do that. So, I mean, I guess it does make sense that he became like that, the kid. So
I just, you know, it's kind of interesting. Here I am, like, you know, we're kids of the 80s, right? Like, largely that's where our childhoods were, at various parts of our childhoods, but we grew up through the 80s, right? But like, you know, there are people. Right, kids going through, going, man, we're childs of the 90s, childs of the aughts, childs of the nows, you know, and it's, I've always thought it's very funny, because as a parent, you're always trying to protect your kids, but it's always kind of retroactive, isn't it?
Like, it's too late. You're
trying to protect them from the things you grew up in.
Right.
But, like, what they're dealing with is different from that. And so it's kind of interesting to go back to see this movie and be like, and now we're talking about it being like, well, you know, we grew up through that. Well, here we are.
God. The 80s, man. The 80s are dark, man.
Yeah.
The 80s are dark.
No, you're right, though. I guess you just can't say it's totally different now for kids. So you can't just be like, why don't you kids understand? Because the world has changed. Is that what you're kind of getting
at? But isn't it the same for kids? It's just different for us looking at it.
Yeah, man. You know, you can only rub dirt on it for so long.
Exactly. It's not dirt now. It's other things. Rub something else on it. It's the same thing. Just
hey, rub some Xanax on it, man. It'll go okay. You got
it. Patch it up. Just you know, you'll be fine. Just sleep it off.
The one thing that strikes me about this movie, right? I saw it was $6 million the budget. Okay. I've got 14 instances of product placement ranging from Cosmo magazine to Hostess Cakes to New Kids on the Block and Bobby Brown. Did Universal actually spend any money? That $6 million is all Nintendo, right?
Went to Fred. Savage.
Did Nintendo not give them the $6 million to spend?
This is what I'm saying. You know, is this the only movie in history that is just 100% profit for? There's no way. There's no way Universal spent any money on this game. For Christ's sake, Christian Slater comes out here. Hey, let's go to Dairy Queen. Why?
Oh man.
There's so much product placement.
There are almost 40 scenes cut out of this movie, and every single one establishes part of the character stories.
There it is.
Every single one.
And now you know what?
There's no product placement cut out of that.
Now you know what?
Not one scene. I have a whole friggin' notebook that I wrote about every scene that was deleted from this movie.
Okay.
It's all narrative and development.
Give us, before we get out of here, James, since you did all this work, give us your top five deleted scenes. That would have pick five deleted scenes that, because we can't put them all back in, right? Because this is supposed to be a 90-minute movie, and it still runs a little bit long. It's still like an hour and, it's 97 minutes, I believe, this movie? So
yeah.
What five scenes would you add in to make this movie a little bit more fleshed out?
Almost none from the second half of the deleted scenes. They kept a lot of the exposition in. There were no subtleties there. I would honestly leave in the very first five. Mm-hmm. I mean, maybe cut one of those out and put the overpass scene where they're going through the canyon and they throw away the scenes and then talk about Christine. But those first four scenes establish the trauma that every single character in the Woods family outside of Christine and Jibby are going through. That's the backstory. That's the backbone of all the supporting characters.
Oh.
You can't possibly understand anything. Like the Ninja Turtles scene, like Norbert was saying, you have no idea why that's such a big breakthrough moment. Like when we were kids, I was like, oh, the dad is playing video games. Yay! This guy that has shut off his own family and is just diving into alcoholism and depression over the trauma that he has faced, the guilt, and what his kids have gone through. Now he's playing Turtles and trying to hook up the thing and get through this stage. Yeah, that's a lot more powerful now. That is probably my single – there's first three, four scenes. Easy.
I love it. Yeah, I mean, because when he does decide to go to California, he's like, I'm just going to go. I'm just going to take my brother. It's fine. I'm like, wait, what? Like, just because the dad yells at him a little bit. So, yeah, it's really
dude,
not
you're 12. What the hell, dude? Yeah, you're 12. You're 12. Yes. And running away from home was a real 80s thing on 80s TV. Running away from home on 80s TV was what gave the kids in the 80s the idea to run away from home.
We grew up on Punky Brewster. This was the next evolution.
That's it.
And then in the 90s, they took it so far with like Blank Check. A kid becomes a millionaire on his own. And oh, man.
What about North with Elijah Wood, where he just gets to go around the planet? Just meeting people he thinks are his parents.
Yeah, I remember watching that movie and just feeling supreme disappointment. I remember so as a child, you're very rarely disappointed by movies. I think you just watch them because you just love movies. You're like, oh man, there's a movie, I'm gonna go watch it. So I remember we were in 95, I was 13, and I remember I was going to like watch The Great Panda Adventure. I was watching Virtuosity. I was watching Desperado. Like, I was watching everything. I'm like, these are all great. Nice. I was like, these are beautiful movies.
Nice.
But I remember North and going, I don't like this. I remember
I think I saw North, right? So when I grew up as a kid, like, we didn't have premium channels. Like, we had the clicker. It went to channel 23. And, like, mostly we got, like, ABC Sunday Movie, which was huge. This was the story I wanted to say anyway. The only VHS tape I own still. Is the recording that me and my dad made of the Sunday night ABC movie, The Wizard. I own it.
Nice.
With the California great commercials are on there. Nice. So much other, it's great. It's the only VHS I own. Me and my dad went to see this. So this movie got released December 15th, 1989. It was his birthday. And Christmas Vacation, I think, was December 1st, that same year, right? So, like, I want to go out and see this movie. Like, everybody did. Everybody, as far as I knew, everybody in the whole world wanted to go see The Wizard. But, like, so my dad took me, like, end of February, maybe beginning of March, down to the Quadraplex to see the wizard. So we get out there and we're like, it's still on the marquee. Okay, we go in there like, no, this, we don't have this movie anymore. And I'm like, I'm devastated. Dad's like, well, we got to see something here. It was like Bird on a Wire, some other movies, and Christmas Vacation. And my dad's like, well, let's just see Christmas Vacation. And I'm like 8, 9 years old. And so that's how I saw Christmas Vacation.
Oh, that's a fun one to watch.
They were the only ones at the theater just eating the Whoppers because my dad loved those milk and malt things, man. And yeah, so that's the evolution of half of my Christmas decorations is we went to see The Wizard, and it wasn't in theaters anymore because nobody went to see it.
That's why when it snowed in Korea, you really wanted to go out and like try to sled.
Yeah, that was fun.
I recreated my cardboard. I'm surprised I didn't die that night when I actually made it down on cardboard. Cardboard.
We all lived through it, man. We're still here.
Norbert's still
holding up the banner for us.
I'm very happy we had this Korean reunion. Thank you so much for doing all this. Norbert, I know, thanks for joining us on short notice, man. Glad to have you on.
Thank you, brothers. Good to see both of you.
Saranghaeyo.
Saranghae, 맞아요.
And,
Saranghaeyo. Oh, it reminds me of Martin, man. The dance. I still got that video, Norbert, man. The time we went up to Sonamdong. Oh, may he rest in peace. I love that guy. Yeah, you were there too, man.
Yeah. He took me out for my first night there, and we partied, and I got so drunk that I told everyone to go to another karaoke joint, and I snuck away and grabbed a cab and got out of there.
Nice.
That's what they wanted us to do. That's what they tried to do.
That's it.
Oh, yeah. Well, they
Joe
got
White's
me.
First night, he missed 3 steps and broke a tooth.
Oh, wow.
Oh, and just before you go, remember, old dude in the Speedo, unashamed. He's wearing a hat.
Owning it.
He's like 70 DGAF. He had some cakes.
You know what I love, too? They give the gratuitous shot of the woman handing out candy bars or selling candy bars. Very gratuitous, but then they cut to a gratuitous shot of that dude in the Speedo, and I'm like, okay, equal opportunity, gratuitous shots.
Unashamed, dude, unafraid.
Man, he made me feel not confident. Like, I was like, man, I have respect for this dude.
Body positivity.
Oh, gosh. Well, hey, James,
that's what I'm saying, man.
Thank you so much for all the research you did, man. I know you put a lot of work into this.
It's a movie that meant a lot to me. You know, and it was an interesting journey, I have to say that. Going back to a movie that I was like, the Jack of my movies, top 3 royalty there, and then you go back and you're like, oof, nah,
oof da,
nah, yeah, oof da, that's oof da. Man, I feel like I'm back in Wisconsin.
So do you guys, before we get out of here, do you guys want to sing the Fog Hat Slow Ride to get out of here for us? Do you want to belt that
slow
out on our way
ride.
Out?
Take it easy.
No. That's
yeah,
all I
want to do the bow down. Bow, bow.
Exactly.
Easy. Bow down, down, down. Bop, bop, bop. Oh, man, this brings me back to the last podcast we did, damn it.
All right, well, that was beautiful. So for me, Mark Hoffmeyer, Norvan, James Moolah, this is Movie Some of the Flakes. We'll see you next week.